Welcome to the Oldie Literary Lunch, sponsored by Noble Caledonia, the world experts in small ship cruising.
Thank you. Well, an afternoon of contrast. Look, 2 minutes past three. Okay, well, I've already eaten up a tenth of my time. My talk is going to be somewhat in contrast to the previous presentation. Also, of course, talking about cities and towers, what a contrast to where we are now. A wonderful prospect of ancient landscape. Also, by the way, the book, Skyscraper, is mostly about Chicago. But in my experience of travel, which now goes back many decades, particularly those BBC series like Around the World in 80 Treasures, I'm looking at ancient things. I've been to the world's oldest cities in Mesopotamia, Iraq, Ur and Uruk, and through Afghanistan. And recently I went to Palmyra to see the frightful damage inflicted on that city by Islamic State. That was a program a couple of months ago. My interest has always been in that direction, the past, old things for oldies like me, but I've always had a love affair for Chicago. I first went to Chicago, I suppose, I don't know, 20 years ago. When you go to Chicago, of course, you have to confront a reality, one reality of the world in which we live, an urban reality, a city of towers. This, by the way, is not Chicago. You'll recognize it as New York, but it does the image. Like it or not, we have to reflect upon this form of architecture, for good or ill, to see high-rise buildings as works of art, which once they were. Once, of course, high-rise was associated with greed, exploitation, and a cut-price public housing. It was a wonderful sort of adventure in technology and in technical prowess and in imagination. And so I've always been intrigued by the challenge of trying to appreciate high-rise architecture. And of course, I say if you live in a city in Europe, you have to take a view, like it or not. And often with architecture, it's best to try and find something to like, isn't it? To enjoy your walk through the city. Now, Chicago has intrigued me because the most amazing decade, which is really what the book's about, the decade of the 1885 to 1895, so to speak, was taken to be the world's first skyscraper emerged. Now, I'm going to go over there. It's a bit of a kind of cabaret act now. I'm going to go over and change images. I've got three or four images. Now, contemplate this structure. It is called the Reliance Building, and this is what the focus of my book is. It's completed in 1895 in the city of Chicago. I mean, if you know about Chicago, you know, it's a new city, of course, on the western edge, so to speak, of the inhabited part of America, inhabited as it was in the early 19th century. The great city between the west and the eastern part had a great fire in 1871, a colossal fire that ravaged 3 square miles of the then city centre, and it rebuilt itself, and it boomed. It was the great boom city, the city of trade, and the great stock market. The stock being livestock, cattle being driven. Is it actually not working? This thing is it popping
yes,
them
yes,
out?
Perfectly well.
It's okay. It seems to be going on.
Yeah.
So cattle driven from the west, stock livestock being slaughtered and then driven in trains to be consumed in the east as packaged products. So it was a great city of blood, really, or animal blood certainly, but not just animal blood. I will say a little bit more in a moment. It boomed, and in the 1890s, it became the home for lots of kind of new ideas in architecture, including high-rise. If by skyscraper, it's a funny old phrase, it's a funny word, if by skyscraper one means buildings like this, which essentially pretty tall, this is 16 stories, I think not that tall by modern standards, but astonishingly tall at that period, built with a metal frame. That was a fundamental part of the skyscraper. You know, you have a minimal but strong frame. Often nowadays it's reinforced concrete, then it was cast iron or steel.
Well done.
And which means in the spirit of Gothic architecture, the load-bearing nature of the building is not carried on the outer wall, but on the structural frame. In Gothic, it's, you know, ribs and vaults and maple stone, but in the skyscraper it's a steel frame, but leaving the elation liberated to be mostly glass.
And here
it is, the Reliance Building is 90% glass. Also, what's interesting about this building is that ornament is diminished. If you think about 19th century buildings, you think about most buildings in history, they have looked back to the past. The Parthenon is evocation, as it happens, of Egypt. Certainly Roman buildings are an evocation of Greek classicism. We take it for granted. The great Victorian railway stations are an evocation of the Gothic past. The pedigree of the past was all important for cultural reasons, for many reasons, for economic reasons in the past. But here, at this moment in time, almost for the first time, a dependence on history, historical styles, is abandoned. The great ornament is not, kept on classical elevations or Gothic detail. The ornament is the expression of manner and materials and means of construction. That becomes fundamental to modern architecture, like this building in the 20th century. Materials and how they're put together become the ornament, not upon classical details or Gothic details. It all happens with this building, the Reliance Building in Chicago. You can now go and see it. This is taken when it was completed in 1895, but now it's a hotel and a reasonably good restaurant, so you can go and experience it. However, putting it in this context is fascinating. Steel frame, there we are. That's the bones of the building. We're all familiar with such things now. This is my picture of it. It's quite interesting. There are some historical details. The little Gothic panels below the windows, but I say mostly it's glass, and the panels are terracotta, fireproof. Being fireproof is all important, one of the great things. And also with this form of construction, a frame, you have flexible and adaptable interiors. Interestingly, one has to liberate oneself from associations now when one talks about high-rise buildings, because I think we generally now regard skyscrapers as an affront. They're an affront for several reasons. One, of course, a very tall building you can't escape from. I live in the City of London, I live in Spitalfield, and I'm just fed up of seeing Foster's Gherkin and Shard. Everywhere I look, there the building is. It doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. High-rise buildings dominate the city. And so therefore, one, by association, one can be irritated. A part of what bothers the association with greed and so on and so forth. What's interesting, though, if you think back to in the 1890s, that was obviously was not the case. You had one great model of high rise, the Tower of Babel. God remember, was very angry because man becomes audacious by building so tall that he thinks God thinks nothing will escape man's attention. So God intervenes. So there's a kind of a bit of a backstory to high rise being a bit dodgy. But in the past, generally speaking, tall buildings were sacred buildings, either minarets or towers. This is which was the tallest building in the world the towers built in the 14th century and it was hit by lightning in the 16th century. Until then, it was the tallest building in the world, and it was a sacred building. So height in the past, building tall had a very different association. Aspirational.
Lincoln.
Well, I did say Lincoln, didn't I? Yeah, it's Lincoln. 11 minutes past. About 4 more minutes. Just as interestingly, I mentioned blood in Chicago. Oh, by the way, this is by the same architects at the Reliance Building, which was a man called John Root and Daniel Burnham, rather famous for later high-rise buildings in New York, such as the Flatiron.
This is their first
attempt at a tower block. This is the first time the book was called a skyscraper, the Montauk Building, 1881 in Chicago. Basically ugly, isn't it? But in a way, that is part and parcel of the quality of such things. Utilitarian design, a functionalism, becomes part of the high-rise aesthetic. This is a steel frame clad with terracotta, long ago demolished. And also the Flatiron. What's interesting, by the way, a little subplot here about architecture generally. This is Burnham's Flatiron in New York, 1902. So the same practice of built the ruins. What you might observe about this, it's a very fascinating thing takes place. The pedigree of the past in history and ornamentation is not just being conservative in one's taste, it was business. And the Reliance Building was too pioneering, too radical in its glass and its abandonment of historical decoration. By this pair, or Rudstedt by Burnham, is this building, and of course, essentially, it's a classical design. They've gone back to the classical tradition. The windows are small, there's a great cornice, it's like a palazzo in Venice. So the woman still hovers there as a way of making a radical commercial building culturally acceptable and acceptable in this urban setting. Last point, where does it all go? Well, anyway, I mentioned blood. What's interesting about the Chicago story also attracted me. It was not just the mass slaughter of livestock. 14 million cattle a year were massacred, slaughtered in Chicago and packed east. There was something strange in the atmosphere of the city. In the 1890s, there is this great World Columbian Exposition held in Chicago in 1893 to celebrate, if that's a word, certainly, in quote, discovery of the Americas by Columbus. And it was a great celebration, of the triumph of the implanted settler communities in America. It was quite an astonishing exposition. Interesting because the architecture chosen for the exposition was not the Chicago pioneering high-rise, but white classical buildings. I said, talk about this much in my book, which seemed to celebrate the sort of autocratic power of European monarchy rather than the democratic principles of the new nation. Very odd, but it's all part of the strange atmosphere. The exposition is famous for
many things.
One is for its, it became called the White City, the palaces. Secondly, because of its outrageous and notorious refusal to acknowledge the contribution made to American history by African Americans. That became a huge issue at the time, with a focus really of much of the debate that took place afterwards. And also, it was doomed by death. It was an astonishing association with mortality. There are the cattle dying. John Root, the architect of the Lions, dies. The designer of the landscape of the exposition dies just before it opens. The mayor of Chicago, who was the mastermind behind it, is assassinated a few days before it closes. That's nothing in comparison to activist H.H. Holmes, who was a mass murderer active in Chicago, killing about 200 people. He built something called the Murder Castle, full of strange rooms and contraptions for murdering people and disposing of their bodies. He killed about 200 people who had gone to visit the city for the exposition. Definitely something was odd afoot in Chicago at that time, associated no doubt with the sinister implications of high-rise architecture. If I say to you that in the meaning of high-rise buildings, very briefly, just over time, just one last thought. What is it all taking us? We will not be surprised if I tell you that in Europe, four of the tallest buildings are in Moscow. They still carry this kind of rather terrifying association of prowess and power. And in Putin's Russia, building high is still regarded as a politically sort of imposing thing to do. This is a building going up in St. Petersburg at the moment. St. Petersburg, you know, wonderful city. It was a huge battle. Gazprom is for it, which is basically one of Putin's it's basically state-owned power companies. A vast tower now is pushed to 5 kilometres from the city centre, but nevertheless, an astonishing and alarming image of what high-rise architecture can look like, can be. Gazprom, so it's a flame. It's banal. It twists like a flame because it's for Gazprom, which is a gas company. So this is the high-rise appearing at the moment. So this is not history when I talk about high-rise in Chicago. It's about the cities we live in and how we deal with this sort of architecture that defines our urban setting. And of course, you're familiar with the tallest building in the world of all places, Dubai. Why isn't Dubai? No particular reason. I did ask. I did a program about it. It's designed by an American architectural practice. I asked one of the members of the Royal Family who was responsible for this building. And I can't remember what the series was. I said, why build high? Because, of course, as you're aware, architecture can kill the planet. The amount of pollution that can be involved in constructing materials, transporting materials, and making such buildings habitable, had with glass. He said, well, why not? Well, that's the point, isn't it? You know, it puts you on the map, apparently, having such tall buildings. And of course, we are only too familiar. When I say architecture can kill, it can kill literally Grenville Tower, high-rise housing designs in the late 1960s. Again, making us have to come to terms with, live with the consequences of building in the skies amongst the gods, and being audacious in a manner that God did not like. You know, if you get it wrong, the consequences are fatal. As you know, I think 700 people died here. Most of the people who died lived in the upper parts of the building. There was no fire, smoke alarms, only one staircase. So, though my book is a history book, in a sense, it is about those issues which affect our architecture we built today and our lives today. And so the third of the book is about the legacy of high rise, where it goes, how we respond to it, and thank you very much.
For more about the Oldie magazine and the lunches, go to theoldie.co.uk.